line. Coming up next is going to be the evening news, but first we got to tell you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Resilience in Action, a fundraiser of Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor in Portland. Living Yoga's mission is to foster healing and resilience through trauma-informed yoga. They provide 35 weekly trauma-informed yoga classes in corrections and reentry, addiction treatment and recovery, and community health programs throughout the Portland metro area. Resilience in Action fundraiser features live storytelling, a panel discussion, drinks, food, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's Resilience in Action, a fundraiser for Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor, 1605 Northwest Everett Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Million customers and couriers and merchants were affected by DoorDash's data breach.
The Oregon Federal Prosecutor's Office announced today the arrest of 30 people involved in a drug smuggling ring between Portland and Mexico.
And in environmental news, reports have surfaced about federal and county level surveillance of citizens who have been protesting the Jordan Cove project.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 2nd, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Leslie McLam. Last Thursday, the app delivery company DoorDash revealed a recent massive data breach, which occurred on May 4th. The information was discovered in a blog post and reported on by TechCrunch, which says that, quote, 4.9 million customers, delivery workers, and merchants had their information stolen by hackers. The app company also suggested that customers who joined after April 5, 2018 were not affected, and a DoorDash spokesperson blamed the incident on an unnamed third-party service provider. DoorDash has also recently made headlines for a wave of lawsuits regarding labor misclassification and subsidizing courier pay with consumer tips.
Today, Oregon federal prosecutors announced 41 people in the Portland metropolitan area have been indicted on charges for smuggling illegal drugs into the United States. Between November 2018 and September 2019, the 41 accused allegedly smuggled hundreds of kilograms of heroin and methamphetamine from Mexico into the Portland area. Oregon Live reports that, quote, some of the defendants are expected, end quote, to make appearances in the U.S. District Court for the first time today. So far, of the 41 accused, 30 people were arrested this morning and are currently in custody. Underneath these alleged crimes is addiction and deaths caused from consuming illegal drugs. At least 272 people in Oregon died in 2018 from complications linked to methamphetamines.
A federally sponsored anti-terrorism center in Oregon assisted a law enforcement task force monitoring groups protesting the Jordan Cove fracked gas terminal in Coos Bay. The Oregon Titan Fusion Center, part of a federal network created to monitor terrorist activities, distributed information gathered by the Southwestern Oregon Joint Task Force and shared information from the gas project's private security with some of the task force members. The Coos County Sheriff's Office, leading the task force, passed on information harvested from social media accounts and emails to the Fusion Center and various local, state, and federal police agencies. 45 leaders from international, national, and Oregon-based organizations sent a letter to Governor Kate Brown last week asking her to withdraw the state's cooperation with any surveillance of activists. Bill McKibben, co-founder of 350.org, said that, quote, monitoring and compiling information about Oregonians' political or social views, activities, or associations violates Oregon law, end quote.
In Kentucky, protesters are rallying to protect the Bernheim Arboretum and Research Forest from a proposed natural gas pipeline. One expert says that utilities often target protected lands because they are less developed. Nadia Romligan has the story.
A proposed natural gas pipeline that would bulldoze large tracts of forest land in Bullitt County is drawing protests. Supporters of the Bernheim Arboretum and Research Forest say the pipeline would decimate the natural park and wilderness area. Bernheim's executive director, Dr. Mark Worms, says a year ago, the organization purchased 494 acres. A few weeks later, he says he was notified by LG&E about its intent to run a natural gas pipeline through the region.
Since we have deed restrictions and conservation easements on these parcels, that's impossible. We said that we were obligated legally to fight any kind of pipeline or transmission line, and so now we're seeing ourselves being sued by LG&E so that they could condemn our land and take it through the power of eminent domain.
Purchased by philanthropist Isaac Bernheim 90 years ago, the park's more than 16,000 acres are dedicated to conserving wildlife habitat. Worms points out that a pipeline project would destroy acres of land and carbon-capturing forest without the opportunity for regrowth, and at the wrong time in history.
At a time when Louisville and this region, and in fact Kentucky as a whole, is heating rapidly due to a global climate crisis,
Sierra Club member Donald Dott is on the board of the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust. He says utilities often target protected lands because they are less developed.
I think they could certainly find an alternative. The problem here comes from the fact that this is a large tract of undeveloped land. There's no homes, there's no businesses. So for them, it's a less expensive area to go through.
In a statement on LG&E's website, the utility maintains that the pipeline is needed to reliably serve Bullitt County residents and says the project was approved before Bernheim purchased the property. For Public News Service, I'm Nadia Romligan.
Water runoff aiding phosphorus pollution becomes the collaborative focus of one Northwestern Wisconsin utility and farmers. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When heavy rain falls in northwest Wisconsin, fertilizer and manure can wash off farm fields into nearby waterways. This pollution contains phosphorus, which can cause algal blooms and foul surface water. As the climate warms, the problem could get worse.
We know we're going to see increased precipitation events. We know we're going to have more severe precipitation events.
Aaron Houghton is with New Water, Green Bay's wastewater utility. State regulations require the utility to reduce phosphorus in the water it discharges. But instead of building a $100 million treatment plant, New Water decided to tackle the problem at its source. The utility worked with crop and soil experts and farmers to minimize runoff. They experimented with planting cover crops, tilling the soil less, and planting grass buffers alongside fields.
Keeping those nutrients in soil where they need to be and on those fields and really working for that farmer.
She says the early results are promising, so New Water is expanding the project into a 20-year plan. The utility is confident that by preventing runoff in the first place, it can reduce phosphorus pollution without an expensive new treatment plant. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Over the weekend, the board of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees voted unanimously to not endorse or contribute to Oregon legislators who had voted for Senate Bill 1049, which made several changes to PERS, the Public Employees Retirement System. Last month, the Oregon AFL-CIO made a similar decision. The most significant part of the bill will extend repayment of PERS $27 billion deficit for 8 years, saving over $1.2 billion beginning with the 2021 to 23 biennium. The most controversial part redirects some of employees' retirement contributions from a 401k life savings plan into a different account, cutting retirement benefits by 1 to 2%. The other major union representing Oregon public employees, the Service Employees International Union, has not yet made any decisions on endorsements for 2020. Two Democratic candidates for Attorney General, State Senator Mark Haas of Beaverton and State Rep Jennifer Williamson of Portland, voted for SB 1049.
A Vancouver woman has filed a lawsuit against the city's public transportation system, C-Tran, for injuries she sustained in a 2016 incident. According to the Columbian, the plaintiff, Sarah Anderson, was, quote, waiting at a C-Tran shelter at East 12th Street and Broadway when a bus crashed into the shelter. Anderson's lawsuit says that the supporting pole of the bus shelter struck her in the head and does not specify a monetary amount for damages.
Last Wednesday, according to police and news reports, while an unhoused man was admiring a car after his belongings had been taken, a homeowner came out with a gun, yelled at the homeless man, briefly went into his house, and came back out with a paintball gun and began shooting. KBOO reporters Leslie McClam and Corey Elia spoke with the victim, who wishes only to be identified as Chris, a few days after the incident.
What happened that night? How did all this begin?
I was looking for cams, and I jumped in a dumpster, and two kids locked me in the little cage area, and they stole my cans and my backpack.
Okay. I understand that a resident in that area came out, and then an incident where he had, according to KGW, pulled a gun on you, went back inside, and then got a paintball gun and started firing at you.
Repeatedly. I did look in his car, but I was looking to see if it was a manual or an automatic. My little brother has an engine for a Honda, and he wants a car. I figured a car on jack stands, it's got to be something that, you know, maybe they want to sell it. It looked like it might have been a real gun. It might have been one of those CO2-powered BB guns, you know, because they're pretty realistic looking. And he was flashing that around, and as soon as one of the neighbors came out, he put it in his pocket. And he told his friend to go grab the paintball gun. They said they had already called the cops. So I was like, I'll wait here until the cops get here because, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. And his buddy brought out the paintball gun. He told him to shoot me. I recognized who his friend was, and I know he knows who I am. So he wouldn't do it. And then the other guy grabbed it. I ran, and he shot me. Just repeatedly over and over and over and over again.
As far as the witness account to me that has been given, he had chased you down the street or something after shooting you at first?
Well, yeah, when I started to run, he was running with me, shooting me, and he wouldn't stop, so I ran up and knocked on a door. Apparently they weren't home, but he hit me a couple of times, like in the ribs, and I couldn't breathe, and I fell down, and he just kept shooting and shooting, even though I was begging him to stop.
From there, I believe ambulance officers arrived at that point?
Yeah, he also, you know, he kicked me in the head probably 4 or 5 times, you know, and then, I don't know, I blacked out, I don't know, I couldn't, okay. Don't remember exactly. I know there's a lady there talking to me, and then the cops showed up in the ambulance. She talked me into going to the hospital.
Okay. What do you mean by she had talked you into? Were you hesitant to go at first?
Yeah, I'm homeless. I don't have money. You know, it costs a lot just to ride in an ambulance.
Why didn't you press charges?
Because then I'll be labeled as a snitch.
Okay.
And then too many problems for me.
Okay. So what happened after you got to the hospital?
They took me in. They put me in a wheelchair, set me in the hallway. I don't know how long because I was in and out the whole time. They cleaned up a couple wounds on my face, a couple on my hand, wheeled me out to the lobby by the front doors and left me there. said I could sleep until the buses started running.
And what time did you leave the hospital?
Like 5:30 in the morning.
And came back out here to St. John's?
Yeah.
Okay. So what were your interactions like with the officers that showed up to answer all this? You tried to explain what occurred. Did they even, like, take your account of it? Or...
I don't think they did.
So they mainly took the neighbor's account?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they just seen what he was yelling at. When they took my backpack, I had been showing a homeless girl that's just recently out here, you know, where she can collect cans and stuff. I was carrying one of her bags. She had just bought food. She hadn't eaten in 2 days. She just used all of her money to buy food, and they took that bag too.
So, total, what were your injuries from this?
I think I might have a broken hand. I know my head's hurt since that night. I've had a pounding headache.
And prior to this instance, did you have any interaction with this guy?
No.
None at all?
No. His friend, yes, but not him.
That was KBOO's Corey Elias speaking with a man who was the victim of a violent paintball attack after admiring a nearby car.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the Boo. Then at 7, we have Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be a 60% chance of rain, with a low of 49 degrees. For tomorrow, the chance of rain increases to 80%, with a high temperature of 61 degrees. Today in history, 60 years ago, the iconic show The Twilight Zone premiered on CBS. And the quote of the day is from The Twilight Zone creator and host Rod Serling, who died in 1975 at the age of 51. "There are weapons that are simply thoughts. For the record, prejudices can kill and suspicion can destroy."
Today, after an emotional trial of the death of 26-year-old Botham Jean, former Dallas police officer Amber Geiger has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for murder. It was up to the jury to decide between a charge of manslaughter or murder. A year ago, then Dallas police officer Amber Geiger was on her way home after a long shift and entered Botham Jean's apartment thinking it was hers. Geiger claimed she feared for her life and shot Jean, who was sitting in his living room and eating ice cream and watching television. The case gained national attention not only for the odd circumstances of an officer entering the wrong apartment and shooting the apartment's owner, but also given that Jean was an unarmed black man shot and killed by an off-duty white police officer. During the trial, prosecutors emphasized that there were several clues for Geiger, a trained officer, to notice she was on the wrong floor and entering the wrong apartment. One of the first clues being that Jean had a bright red welcome mat outside his home and the smell of marijuana in his home. Prosecutors also pointed out that Geiger's training was to call for backup, which she did not. The Dallas station was minutes away from the apartment complex.
Yesterday, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia upheld the FCC's repeal of net neutrality. However, the ruling does allow for state protections of the free internet. Suzanne Potter has the story.
The Trump administration has the right to repeal Obama-era net neutrality protections. That's the decision Tuesday from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The ruling means internet service providers like Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast will continue to have the legal right to block or slow down websites they don't like or charge more for faster internet service. Timothy Carr with the nonprofit group Free Press says the ISPs may now be emboldened to push websites that they own and thus stifle competition and freedom of expression.
It's really the Wild West out there. Without net neutrality protections, control over the internet falls into the hands of the very large phone and cable companies that have their own interests in prioritizing certain content over others.
FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, a Trump appointee and former attorney for Verizon, welcomed the decision, saying net neutrality has stifled telecom investment. The decision did, however, make it clear that the FCC cannot block state-level net neutrality laws like the one California passed last year. In April, the U.S. House passed the Save the Internet Act, which would restore the protections. Michigan Democratic Senators Debbie Stabenow and Gary Peters co-sponsored the Senate version, but it was blocked by the Republican leadership. Carr says a lot depends on the next election.
Realistically, much of this rests on November 2020 and what happens with elections in Congress and who ends up as the President of the United States. It depends on who's in power.
The biggest internet service providers, who spent millions lobbying for the repeal, have not implemented anti-competitive policies thus far, but have not ruled out doing so in the future. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new poll shows 49% of those asked support impeachment, while 43% oppose it, but that margin will likely be growing. The just-released poll for the Progressive Change Institute shows that a third of the voters who oppose impeachment actually agree that Trump committed high crimes, but are concerned that it would hurt Democrats politically. 71% of those surveyed said that a vote on the articles of impeachment should include, quote, all alleged high crimes and misdemeanors, not just the most recent high-profile ones, while 29% felt the articles should focus on the recent Ukraine revelations. Stephanie Taylor, Progressive Change Institute co-founder, said, quote, people are ready to fight back against all the ways that Trump is enabling corrupt corporate control of our democracy.
Why would anyone pay thousands of dollars for dozens of hotel rooms, then not use most of them? That is what the House Committee on Oversight and Reform is investigating, because the hotels in question belong to President Donald Trump. Politico reported, quote, the investigation began after the committee received information that two entities, a trade association and a foreign government, booked a large quantity of rooms but only used a fraction of them. Committee member Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly said, quote, now we're looking at a near-raw bribery. Since Trump took office, his continuing connection to his hotels and other assets has raised questions about violating the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which forbids public officials from profiting while in office. In the phone call transcript released last week by a whistleblower in the intelligence community, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had said that he has stayed at the Trump Tower in New York.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is trying to see through Trump's eyes.
See it Trump's way. He's not president. He's the CEO of USA Inc., a subsidiary of Trump International, whose only priority is company profits. Barr, Pompeo, McConnell work for him, not the U.S. or its citizens. Ukraine, Australia, and many others are just part of USA Inc.'s supply chain. The commander of thieves isn't giving up this cash flow. Impeachment? Lost election? Who's going to make him go away? A century ago, companies hired armed goons to silence the strikers and unions. Now the powerful have police, armies, and access to everything we say. They have mass media to distort what happens to their advantage, to split us citizens against one another instead of united against them. From Trump's point of view, it's simple. Corporations have rights. People, like the Amazon and the oceans, do not. We're all just resources to get that bottom line so deep none of us might get out. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
New reports from the New York Times and Associated Press are outlining the steps that the whistleblower took in informing their superiors about the U.S.-Ukrainian phone call, which has fired up an impeachment inquiry. Reports say that the whistleblower, quote, reached out to a House Intelligence Committee staffer after unsuccessfully trying to raise concerns internally, and was told to obtain legal counsel before approaching the Intelligence Community Inspector General and filing the complaint. The unknown whistleblower followed that advice in an effort to utilize the appropriate and legal channels that are supposedly available to enable a whistleblower complaint. However, there have been obvious attempts to steer the focus away from the whistleblower's claims that Trump made inappropriate requests of a foreign government. Earlier today, during a White House press conference, Donald Trump attempted to accuse the House Chairman Adam Schiff of having prior knowledge of the complaint before it was officially filed by the whistleblower, contrary to any evidence to support the claim. Whistleblower attorney Mark Zaid clarified in a statement that, quote, Neither the legal team nor the whistleblower has ever met or spoken with Congressman Schiff about this matter, end quote. Other whistleblowers, such as Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, and Daniel Ellsberg, have come under personal attack, had their whistleblowing processes scrutinized, and been persecuted for revealing embarrassing and/or unethical information about those in positions of authority. According to CBS News, the House Intelligence Committee is currently trying to, quote, arrange a voluntary interview with the whistleblower on the condition that the individual's attorneys are granted security clearances to accompany their client to the meeting, end quote.
In New York, multiple court rulings are bringing relief to immigrant workers and families. Andrea Sears has the story.
Unionized workers in New York are praising three recent court rulings that uphold the rights of immigrants. In three separate rulings last Friday, federal judges blocked the Trump administration's attempt to detain immigrant children indefinitely and issued a preliminary injunction against the fast-track deportation of immigrants anywhere in the country without due process. Another case permanently enjoined an ICE hub in California from requesting that local law enforcement detain immigrants based on a flawed database. Those rulings bring some security to members of SEIU Local 32BJ and their families. Union Vice President Shirley Aldabal says the majority of its members are immigrants with temporary protected status or green cards or are naturalized citizens.
They have been part of the fabric of this country for many years, and part of the culture of our union is that of a union of immigrant workers.
Claiming they bring crime and drain resources, the administration has stepped up efforts to deport undocumented people and prevent new immigrants from settling in this country. But immigrants who have lived in the United States for years, including veterans and many with U.S. citizen families, are being deported. To help fight those deportations, Aldabal points out that most 32BJ members have a legal services plan.
They are able to avail themselves of legal counsel to help them get citizenship, to bring their family members, or renew their TPS, or any legal assistance that they need.
She adds the union recognizes that courts can only do so much to protect immigrants. Aldabal says 32BJ will keep working to ensure the rights of its membership and of all workers are recognized and protected.
We're going to continue to fight in the streets. We're going to continue to fight in the courts. We're going to continue to work with our allies for just reform of our immigration system.
For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
In the Badger 2 Medicine area, which borders the Blackfeet Nation and Glacier National Park, a settlement has ended oil and gas leases on lands that are considered sacred. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Oil and gas leases on land considered sacred to the Blackfeet Nation in Montana will come to an end. A settlement permanently removes all but one of the development leases in the Badger 2 Medicine area. Aaron Bolton reports on Tuesday's settlement between a wilderness group and a Texas oil company.
After the U.S. Interior Department canceled all remaining oil and gas leases in the area in 2017, Moncrief Oil went to court along with another leaseholder to argue for their right to drill. They both won, but the cases were quickly appealed to the D.C. Appellate Court. Now, Moncrief has reached an agreement with the Wilderness Society, an intervener in the case, to retire its lease. That's the only detail of the settlement being released publicly. Peter Angst is the Northern Rockies Regional Director for the Wilderness Society.
But over the last couple months, the Wilderness Society has been in negotiations with Moncrief Oil about settling this out of court, and the lease has been retired, basically effective today.
In a press release, Moncrief said it could have developed the area responsibly, but, quote, the sensitivity to this special area outweighs development. The Badger 2 Medicine area borders the Blackfeet Reservation and Glacier National Park. The tribe has been fighting to stop drilling there for decades. John Murray is the Blackfeet Nation's historic preservation officer.
You know, this is one hell of a big day, you know, and then it's kind of hard to take everything over the last 30-some years and then try to, narrow it down to a few sentences.
But one oil and gas lease remains in the Badger 2 Medicine. It's held by a Louisiana company called Solenex. The fight over that lease is still before the D.C. Court of Appeals. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Legal action challenging the Trump administration's 2017 reduction of Bears Ears National Monument in Utah can proceed. The Salt Lake Tribune reports this week a federal judge rejected the Trump administration's bid for lawsuits to be tossed out. A group of tribes, environmental groups, and other plaintiffs are challenging Trump's proclamation, which slashed the original protection of more than 1 million acres by 85%. The court decision means legal action can continue for now. Meanwhile, a group of tribes which hold Bears Ears sacred traveled to Bluff, Utah last week to advocate for protection of the cultural landscape. Members of the All Pueblo Council of Governors, which represent 20 pueblos in New Mexico and Texas, met with land managers and tribal and environmental groups. The tribes are taking formal action to request a hold on federal oil and gas leases as they seek studies and tribal consultation on proposed development. They're also in support of legislation in Congress to restore protections to the monument. Keystone XL pipeline water permits are up for a hearing in Pierre, South Dakota, Thursday and Friday. The Water Management Board has set 5 days in October to hear testimony for and against TC Energy's application to use water in building the pipeline and for worker camps. Also applying for water use permits are landowners in Meade and Harding counties planning to host worker camps. The hearing starts with public comments and then moves to testimony from parties. The board will hear testimony only in person, not by phone or other electronic means. The other 3 days for the hearing are set for October 29th through the 31st, also in Pierre. Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby was inaugurated Tuesday for a 9th consecutive term to lead the Oklahoma tribe. He renewed his commitment to serve the Chickasaw Nation, pointing to progress in economic development and the expansion of tribal services. Anitubby has worked for the tribe for more than 4 decades as Director of Health Services in the 1970s before being elected as Lieutenant Governor, then Governor. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Last night in Las Vegas, presidential candidate Bernie Sanders felt chest pains and was taken to a hospital. After testing, he was found to have a blockage in one artery. 2 stents were successfully inserted. Sanders is reportedly in good spirits post-surgery, while his campaign has canceled his events until further notice. After the Democratic debate last month, where he experienced